Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Amrei Nardai, Lo Katvinin Urkata Amitaltale. We don't write the equivalent of what is a Harsha'a or a power of attorney on Mitaltale. So an Urkata is a document which grants the party that is given the Urkata the rights to act on behalf of the other party. Basically, to be beyond just a shliach, not just be an agent, but actually step into the shoes of an individual, akin to the power of attorney. Now, the reason that we can't do this, or you can't write an urkata amitaltale, is Amar Rav Ashi la'meimar ma'itayma. What's the reason? Amar lei mishum de Rabbi Yochanan, because of Rabbi Yochanan, and this is why this is relevant to our topic over here, is because of Rabbi Yochanan's shita, which is Amar Rav Yochanan gazav lo tiyashu ba'alim. If the thief steals the item and the Balim have yet to give up hope of recovering it, Shnehem enyan yocholim nakdish. Neither party here can be makdish. Ze lefish enu shelo. This individual, because it's not his, meaning the ganav, doesn't own it, so he can't be makdish. Ze lefish enu birshuto. And the Balim can't do it because it's not in their possession. So even though they own it, it's not in their possession, and therefore they're unable to be makdish. And similarly, with regards to metaltalin, over here, the metaltalim are not in the possession of the Baalim. And since they're not in the possession of the Baalim, they can't write this power of attorney. They can't give a kinyan to the other party to act on their behalf in this instance because they lack sufficient control to grant that kinyan or to grant that, quote-unquote, ownership to the other party. And so that failure of control makes it that they can't grant a harsha'ah here. What exactly the scenario is, seemingly, is a machloket Rashi and Tosafot. Balei Tosafot say here, davka metaltalim de gazle. We're definitely talking about only metaltalim that were stolen. It's a case of theft. And so, it's similar to the case of Rabbi Yochanan. We're talking about it. And now, what the owner wants to do is grant rights to a third party to go and collect on his behalf or to get the gneva back on his behalf. And what we say here is it fails. He can't grant that power to the other individual because he lacks sufficient control to grant that right to the other party to take over as the balim of the item. Aval metaltale de pikadon kadvina. But if it was a pikadon, we would write it, because by a pikadon, yesh koach la'adam lakdish pikadon, sheyesh lo biyad chaviro. An owner can be makdish a pikadon that is held by nifkan on his behalf. Someone holding some sort of asset on his behalf, he can be makdish that asset because both it's his, and it's in his control. Just happens to be deposited with this other individual at this time. And so therefore you're allowed to write an urkata in that case. And the Tosafot prove this from the fact that the gonev mi beit nifkad, the thief comes and steals from the house of the nifkad, meaning the person that you deposited with, mishalem kefal ba'alim. The ganav, if he's caught, pays double to the ba'alim. So you see that the owner really is still the owner of the item when it is deposited with the other party. So Tosafot separates between a case of gezel versus a case of pikadon. And in the case of gezel, he says the urkata doesn't work because of Rabbi Yochanan Shita. Whereas in the case of pikadon, it does work because of the ability of the individual to control it. Rashi doesn't make any distinction like this. And Rashi uses terminology in his Perush to talk about a mafkid, a ne'aman, which is a nifkad, that seem to indicate he's talking about even in the case of a pikadon, that Rashi thinks that you still lack sufficient control in order to write an urkata in that case. You should just know that there's an alternate gius in the Gemara that said, instead of saying an urkata over here, it says an adrachta. An adrachta is a document given by Beit Din that grants collection rights against a party. So the question of writing an adrachta, again, is can you write an adrachta on property that you don't have sufficient control over? And so that's the question at hand here, is it an adrachta, though most of the Rishonim favor the girsa that we have, which is urkata, which is harsha, which is the granting of a almost ownership or power of attorney for the third party to function on behalf of the ba'alim. But so much so, I mean, it's more than just the power of attorney here, because that third party now, in essence, becomes the owner of the item and is not just acting as a shliach, but acting on his own behalf now because he's given those rights of collection. Right? And you could write an urkata for anything that you could grant a kinyan for. Since you can grant a kinyan normally for metaltalim that are in your possession, you can write an urkata for it. But in cases where you're lacking in some way that you can't make the kinyan, then you can't grant an Urkuta. Tosafot extends that to mean that you also can't write an Urkuta on milveh, on loans. Since there's no way to transfer loans, meaning there's no way to make a kinyan on the loan because it was kesef lehotzah nitna, it's impossible to write an harsha'ah for a milveh, just like it's impossible to write a harsha'ah for geneva. And so therefore, the Tosafot says the only scenario where you can write it is a case of pikadon, or in a normal case where you have mentality. But in cases of gzela or cases of loans, it won't work. Ikadam, right? There's another version of this, the Amrei Naradai, Lo kavina an urkata amitaltale de kafre, that we do not write an urkata amitaltalim that are being denied by the party who supposedly is holding them. Taima de kafre. The reason that we don't write it is because he's denied it. The mechse kashikra, because then it looks like we're documenting or we're signing on something that is a lie or made up. Avalo kafre. But if he does not deny it, kadvina, we do write it. Now over here, Rashi clearly seems to indicate that this is a case of a pikadon. We're talking about the case where the mafkid says to the nifkad, give me back the item, and the nifkad denies it. So in the nifkad's denial to give back the item, then we don't write an urkata, because of the fact that how can we grant rights to a party, from the mafkid to this third party, when the nifkad says it doesn't exist, it's not his. It looks like Beit Din is making something up and saying, oh yeah, you can transfer ownership of something that is denied to exist or denied to be there at all. And so therefore, it's not allowed. But without that denial, we would be Kotev and Urkata. We would write an Urkata in those cases. Now you could argue that Rashi is talking about a Mafkid and Nifkad in this case because the Nifkad is denying that he has it. And when he denies it, he becomes like a Gazlan in that case. And then in a sense, the mafkid loses his control over the item because he no longer has access to the item because the nifkad's denying that it's his. So maybe that's a way to deal with Rashi's pshat. Now, in this statement of the Ikadamre, it's clear that they're arguing on the first Lashon. In arguing on the first Lashon, you have to then explain or reconcile that with Rabbi Yochanan Shita. Rabbi Yochanan says when you don't have sufficient control, you can't be maknet, you can't give a kinyan, or you can't be koneet. How does it over here, according to the Gemara, you're able to overcome that problem and still give a kinyan for the Urkata, despite the fact that we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan? So there are one of two ways to deal with that. Either you have to limit Rabbi Yochanan and say it's not relevant in this case, or you have to say our case is unique and it doesn't affect Rabbi Yochanan. So those are the two approaches that are taken by the Rishonim over here. One is to say that Rabbi Yochanan's din is unique to Hekdesh, where he gets the source for it and the posuk that he quoted we saw in yesterday's daf was from Hekdesh, and Rabbi Yochanan's din is a unique din in Hekdesh, and you can't be Makdish something unless you have ownership and control. But we can't extrapolate from that to other areas of Kinyan. So that's one way to deal with it, and therefore the Ikadamri says over here, even though you lack control, you're able to write an Urkata. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is to say no. Rabbi Yochanan's din applies, and it applies broadly. That whenever you lack control, we don't allow you to create a Kinyan. The exception is here by Harsha'ah in this case, because you want to give people the means by which to get their money back, whether it's because there's a ganav, or whether because the money was lent out, whatever it is that they want to do in order to collect their money or get their money back, we want to grant them the rights to do so, even though technically it doesn't work, or even though it shouldn't work, nevertheless, there is this mechanism here, this Harsha'ah that works. And we'll see it towards the end of the Gemara today, that what that takana is in order to solve the problem. But in one of those two ways, you have to resolve the sheet of the Ikadamre with Rabbi Yochanan, since we do paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, and we're going to see in a second we also paskin like the sheet of the Ikadamre. The Amre Naradai, the Naradai also say, Urkata Dolok Tivbe, if you have an Urkata that's not written in it, Zil Don Vizachi, go adjudicate and take possession of it, Va'apik Lenafsheikh, and you'll be able to collect it on your own behalf, Late Be Mishasha. That's not a real Urkata. A real Urkata grants full rights of collection and ownership to the party to which it is granted. And that means that in that document, it's got to state that he has the right to adjudicate, he has the right to take possession of it, and it's his if he takes it. My daima, why does he have to grant them so much power? I mean, in terms of this power of attorney, but it's an enhanced power of attorney. It's not simply that he's acting on your behalf. He becomes the owner of the item. Mishum damalai. Heich lav balderim didiat. The reason that he has to give so much control to the party is because otherwise the defendant in this case, or the one who he's trying to collect from, will say, you're not a litigant, you're not a party to this case. You can't come and collect from me. What right do you have to come to collect from me? The only way he has a right is if he's the owner. And therefore, the Orkata has to give him sufficient ownership and sufficient adjudication rights in order for him to go there and then collect from the guy and not have the guy say, you're not a party to this. What are you doing here? I don't have to answer your questions. Now, as we know, in terms of just pure shlichut, it's true that the mafkid or the nigzal over here could appoint a shliach to act on his behalf. That's not why we have a problem. The issue is, can he appoint a shliach that carries enough weight or power to deal with the gazlan or with the nifkad or with whomever he's trying to get the object back from? He has to empower him sufficiently that not only is he acting on his behalf, but acting in a manner which will force the other party to have to deal with him. And that can only happen if you have an orkada that states that he's basically stepping into the shoes of the balim. He has become the balim of the item. Amar Abaye, v'kitiv bei the mechsa l'shlish u'l'reviya, if the document says that the collector is entitled to a half, a third, or a quarter, migo d'mishtai dina apalgo, since he has a right to go to court or adjudicate the case for that 50%, mishtai dina akula, he can go then and have a din about the remainder. So this is the equivalent of a collection agency, which is that you can grant full rights of the loan to the collection agency, and then there's an agreement between the original owner and the collection agency as to how much the collection agency will get of what they collect. But since the collection agency now has a right to keep that money, whatever it is, they're now a party to the situation. And in being a party to the situation, they can adjudicate their piece of it. And since they can, migo, they can adjudicate their piece, we allow them to adjudicate the whole piece. So what Abaye says is you don't have to have 100% ownership. You just need a portion of it. You need some ownership in the item in order to be a party. And once you're a party, then you can adjudicate the whole 100% on behalf of the other party as well. And so this would grant the right. If you give some sort of ownership to the collection agency, that would be sufficient grounds to allow that collection agency then to adjudicate the case with whomever you're trying to get the asset back from. So I'm going to have a Meymar. A Meymar comes along and says, Itafas lo mafkina mine. If he grabs it, we don't take it away from him. Rashi here brings two explanations as to what this means. The first is, Afagav de lo koti be afik lenafshech. Even though the Urkata does not have the language that we said it needed to have, if the individual went and grabbed it or he got a hold of the asset, we're not going to take it away from him. So even this collector, this party that's been empowered to go and collect, even though his Urkata was not written properly and didn't give him all the adjudication rights and collection rights, or at least going to buy some collection rights, despite the fact that he's tofes based on his Urkata, which doesn't have that language in it, we do not take it away from him. We do not remove it from him. That's the first lashon that Rashi brings. Then he brings a lishna achrina ve'itofa shliach mamon sheutzi ve'igvola atzmo lamafkina minei. If the individual here who's acting on behalf of the other party, if he goes ahead and takes and keeps for himself whatever he's taken out and says, I spent the money, I expended this in order to do this collection, we don't take it away from him. Meaning, since he is empowered here to collect, and he is a party to the case, if he gets whatever he gets a hold of, we're not going to take it away from him if he claims that he took whatever he's deserving of, meaning that's his percentage in the item, or if he says that, I already expended this money in order to collect here, I'm just recovering my expenses, we won't take it away from him. He says, Kach matzati b'kudu b'tshuvat agonim. I found this written in the Tshuvat Agonim, v'zeikar. And he says, this is, I think, the better pshat over here, which is that a Meymar is saying that once empowered, this individual is then fully empowered, that we can't go then and try to remove the item from him. We believe whatever he tells us was the rights or what he collected over here. And in a sense, the Baalim have no recourse against him because they entrusted him, they empowered him through this Urkata, and therefore they can't come now to court and say, take it away from him, it's mine. Because the Urkata grants him that right, and that Urkata, therefore, is empowering to him in order to be tofes whatever he claims he's entitled to. Ravashi says, Kevin de Katvile called the Mitane Mindina Kabalit Alai. Since the Urkata also has a language like this in it, which is, Kodem et ane min dino, whatever comes through the court system, meaning if you adjudicate the case, no matter what the outcome is, kabalit alai, I accept whatever the outcome is. Shliach shavyo. He made him into a shliach. So now Rashi states this explicitly, and this is the way 99% of the Rishonim believe, is that Rav Ashi is coming to argue on a Meimar. He's not arguing fundamentally on what we've said until now. He's simply disagreeing with a Meimar about the Tfisa. And he's saying that, a Meimar, you're wrong, because the Tfisa over here doesn't work. The Shliach is not so empowered. The Shliach does not become like the Baalim, but rather the collector over here, or the person who's empowered, is simply a Shliach, an agent of the Baalim. And since he's a Shliach Shavya, and then we will not say Tafas lo mafkinen minei. Then we will not say that, because if the Baalim make a claim, and they come and say, he took the money, and it belongs to me, we'll give it back to the Baalim. Because he was only empowered to act as a shliach, as an agent on behalf of the Baalim, then he doesn't own it. And therefore he doesn't have any more believability than the Baalim themselves, because he's only an agent of the Baalim. And if he collects whatever he collects, should go back to the Baalim, because they are the rightful owners over here. And therefore whatever he's tofes, he cannot keep. That's according to the second Lashon that Rashi brought. According to the first Lashon that Rashi brought, that we said that he can grab it away from the Nifkad, the Gazlan, whoever it is, and keep it. Over here, we would not allow him to do that, mitofes, because he's not empowered to work on behalf of the original party as a replacement for him, but simply as a shliach. And therefore, it's a tofes, the Baal Chob. It's someone who is acting on behalf of a creditor and takes money for him. We don't allow that. You cannot be tofes for a third party on behalf of that third party, since he's only a shliach. Vika da'amar shutva shavyo. Some say that he made him into a partner. That language that Rav Ashi is stating as part of the Urkata doesn't just make him into a shliach, but makes him a partner. L'may nafkamina. What's the nafkamina between whether you think he's a shliach or if he's a shutaf? L'mit paspalga. Meaning basically the ability to be tofes. Meaning that if he is a partner, then he has rights of tfisa, and at least up to 50% of the value, if that's the deal between them, whatever his percentage of the collection is, up until that point, he has rights of tfisa. As well as, according to the first Lashon, he would have rights of tfisa from the party that's holding the asset, because that individual can't claim that he's not a party here. He's not doing it as a third party, he's doing it as the owner of the item. On the other hand, if he's a shliach, then he can't be tofes. Because the shliach is only an agent, he's not acting instead of the Baalim. He's not replacing the Baalim in any way. And then we have here, v'hilchata shliach shavyo. The halacha is that he is a shliach. You can see that the Gota Bach does not have this in the Girsa, that this was, according to him, a later addition to the Gemara. It wasn't part of Lishna the Gemara. On the other hand, you can find in Rashi and others that seem to think that Hachi Garcina, this is part of the Girsa here, that hilchata shliach shavyo v'lo shakal mideh. That since he's a shliach, he doesn't have a right of tfisa. So now, in the Tosafot over here, he has a question which is based on the Rabbeinu Chananel, which he says, Kotev Rabbeinu Chananel, Da'idna, Nagulu Tov, Urkata, Filu Metalte de Kafre. Today, we write Urkatos on Metaltelim, and on Metaltelim that were denied. V'tayma lo yadano. And the Rabbeinu Chananel says, I have no clue why we do this. So what's clear from the Rabbeinu Chananel, first of all, is that we paskin like the second Lashon, and that's generally the case whenever we have two Lashonot in the Gemara. We tend to favor the Ikadamri, the second Lashon. So over here, we're going to favor the second Lashon. That's why I said to you before that we have to reconcile that with Rabbi Yochanan, who we also paskin like. And so therefore, the Ikadamri, Amrei Nardai, Lokat Vinurukata Metalte de Kafre, that is the halacha. But the Rabbeinu Chananel says, I don't understand. Our practice today is to write an Urkata, even on Metalte de Kafre. Even when the party who's supposedly holding the assets denies that he's holding the asset, denies the fact that he stole it. So why is that the case? Rabbeinu Tami Feresh, the time of the Hilchata Kalishna Batra, the Sugya the Gemara Katvete. So first of all, the Locha is like the second Lashon, because the Gemara follows that. And then, he writes later on, V'keva the Hilchata Kalishna Batra, since the Halacha is like this Lishna Batra, Im Kein Afilo Kafre Katvina. Even if he denies it, we write it, the Ha Lishna Batra Mefresh Taima. The Lishna Batra explains the reasoning behind it, which is, the Lo Katvina Metautal in the Kafre Mishun de Mechzeke Shikra. Because it looks like a lie. It looks like you're making something up. Some guy is denying the fact that he has an asset, and Beit Din's writing that they're making a kinyan on an asset that doesn't exist or is being denied. The Rabbeinu Tam says from many other places in Shas, we see that we do not worry about looking like a lie. And therefore, if I combine the halacha that we find other places in Shas that we don't worry about, shikra, and the halacha here, which is premised on the fact that it is machshek shikra, that would mean that we are kotvim orkata, even on mitautalim. And that's how we get to the modern halacha of how we deal with an orkata according to the Rabbeinu Tam. So then, Tosafot backs up and says, vim tomar ve'en litzmoa, wait, we write urkatas even, or hasha'ah, even on a milveh. We discussed before that a milveh, at least according to the Bali Tosafot, would be impossible to write an urkata on because there's no way to be makneh. There's no way you can grant a kinyan on the milveh. So, again, at least with regards to gezeila, or maybe by a pikadon, we definitely think you can write an urkata. By gezeila, we assume that you can write an orkata as long as we can get around the problem of Rabbi Yochanan and say that this case is somehow different than Rabbi Yochanan. But by milveh, how do we go about doing that? So, and still we write an orkata. That is because, he writes, we hold like the second Lashonir in the Gemara, and that means that we write an orkata even on theft. Even though you can't be maknet. Just like you can't be makdisha, you can't make a kinyan on it, yet we still allow you to write a urkata. The kaimalan ka Rabbi Yochanan. The gazal v'lon yeshua ba'alim, shnehem en yochim lakdish. We paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. The answer is, and this is what I told you before, that in reconciling this second lesson with Rabbi Yochanan, there were two possibilities of how to do it. One possibility is to narrow Rabbi Yochanan and say he's only talking about hekdesh. The other way is to narrow the case here and say Rabbi Yochanan applies everywhere. And that's what the Balei Tosfot are saying. We pass them like Rabbi Yochanan. And that means that you can't make a kinyan. You can't be makdish something that's not in your possession. You can't make a kinyan on something that's not in your possession. That means you can't make a kinyan on a gzela. You can't give it to someone else. You can't make a kinyan on a milveh. You can't give it to someone else. Yet, we still let you write an urkata. So that shows you that urkata can supersede that problem of kinyan. How does it do that? That's the end of the Gemara. Hilchata shliach shavya, which is that the time of the maskin into shliach shavya, that he made him to shliach vasu takana the inyan shlichut. It's like takana the rabbanan that made these shlichim into enhanced shlichim. Keilu ayak kone kinyan gemur, as if they had a kinyan. Veish smach leminag zebegol begozel batra. He says that minag as a proof to later on in the mesechta, but his basic idea is that we want to grant people the ability to collect when things are stolen from them, when people lend out money, and they can't get there, or they can't get to the person, but they want to be able to appoint someone to do it on their behalf. The only way they can do that is through an orkata. So the Chachamim facilitated that through this shlichut of a harsha'ah. And that's the answer in the end. What's the difference between Rabbi Yochanan in this case? Rabbi Yochanan's talking about the kinyan. And you're right, in all these cases, you can't make a kinyan, therefore you can't grant the rights to someone else. So how does it work here? That's the vehicle of Harsha'ah, which is the Takanat Chachamim, that allows you to appoint a Shliach to act on your behalf in these situations and collect on your behalf in these situations. And that's what the Urkator, the Harsha'ah, does. And so that's how the Balei Tosafot reconcile between the Psaka like Rabbi Yochanan, which applies not only to Hekdesh, but everywhere. But the case of our Urkator is a unique case because it's a Takanat Rabbanan that allowed people to use this Harsha'ah to get back their possessions and not have to lose their possessions. Now we move on to the next Mishnah. Ganav al pi shnayim vitavach umachar al pihem. This is a simple case. There's no chiddush over here. Person steals something by two edim, and the two edim see him shecht it or sell it. Then he's chayav arba v'chamisha. That's straightforward. The next piece is the chiddush. O al pi shnayim achirim. Even if he only had two edim testify about the gneva, and then two different edim come along and testify about the tzvicha mechira. Mishalem tashlumai amra v'chamisha. It pays four or five times here, despite the fact that it's comprised of two sets of edim. And we'll see in the Gemara why the chiddush, but the basic chiddush is that the second edim have no idea that it was stolen. All they know is that he shechted it or he sold it. They don't have the other piece of information which is stolen. As far as they're concerned, what they see is him shechting his own animal or selling his own animal. It's only in combination with the first edim that they can be mechayim arba v'chamisha, and that's the chiddush of this part. Ganavu machar b'shabbat, if he steals it and sells it on Shabbat, ganavu machar l'avodah zarah, if he steals it and then sells it to avodah zarah, in that case he's chayav arba v'chamisha. Again, here there's no chiddush. The chiddush is in the opposite case, which is ganav v'tavach. If he stole it and then shechted it on Shabbat, or he stole it and then shechted it l'avodah zarah, where he'd be chayav mitah in both of those cases, that would be kamle d'rabba mine, and therefore in that case, he would not be chayav arba v'chamisha. So these are in contrast to those other cases where he would not be chayav arba v'chamisha. Here he is chayav arba v'chamisha because he's not chayav mitah for these violations. Ganav v'tavach b'yom ha-kippurim. Whether he steals it and sells it, or shechs it on Yom Kippur, he's chayav arba v'chamisha. This is because Yom Kippur, if you violate the melachot of Yom Kippur, you're chayav karet. There's no chiyuv mita baked in Yom Kippurim. And this is according to those that believe that a chiyuv karet is not sufficient to grant you an exemption of kamlei d'rabba mine. Ganav mishel aviv, if he steals from his father, v'tavach u'machar, and then he's toveach, or he sells it, v'achar kach met aviv, and then his father passes away. Obviously, when his father passes away, the Yerusha comes to him, and it's his in the end. Nevertheless, he pays 4 or 5 times here. If he has other brothers or sisters, he'll pay into the estate, and then they'll get a portion of it. Because of the fact that he was toveach u'machar before his father passed away, this is in contrast to the case in the next Mishnah where he shechs it, or he sells it after his father passes away. There he would not be chayav arba v'chamisha, because it was already his when he was toveach u'mocher. Ganav v'tavach, if he steals it and shechs it, v'achar kach hikdish, and then he's makdish it after he shechs it, v'shalem tashlumi arba v'chamisha, here is the requirement in all these cases to pay 4 or 5 times. Again here, because he was only makdish it afterwards, then he stole it and then he shechted it. If he had been makdish it beforehand, then he would not have to pay arba v'chamisha because it already would have been in the possession of Hekdesh. And then in the possession of Hekdesh, he's stealing from Hekdesh, and then you don't pay arba v'chamisha to Hekdesh. Ganav v'tavach l'rfu'ah o l'klavim. He steals it and shechs it for the purpose of using for medical reasons, or he shechs it in order to feed it to the animals. Hashochet v'nibzei treifa. If he shechs it and he finds that it's a treifa, it's not a kosher animal because it's a treifa. Hashochet chulin ba'azara, or he shechs chulin in the azara, which makes it a problematic shechita, it's a sur. Mishalein tashlumi arba b'chamisha. In all these cases, he pays 4 or 5 times. Rabbi Shimon puter b'shnei elu. In the latter two, Rabbi Shimon says you do not have to pay 4 or 5 times. This is Rabbi Shimon the shitato throughout Shas, which is that Rabbi Shimon believes that shechita she'ena ruya, a shechita that does not result in an animal that can be eaten and you can get hanah from, is not called a shechita. So in the latter two cases, when you shecht it and then it's found to be a treifa, that's not a good shechita. Even though the shechita itself is a good shechita, but the shechita does not result in you being able to eat the animal. And so therefore it's not called a shechita if you need a shechita for whatever the din is over here. And same is true by shechita tchulin bazara, which are surim bahana'a. That shechita does not result in an animal you can eat. The first two cases, which is the rufal the klavim, there the shechita was a good shechita. It could be eaten by individuals. It just happened to be that you shechted it for medical reasons, or you shechted it for the dogs to eat. But if someone wanted to eat it, it was a kosher shechita, and then Rabbi Shimon would agree that that shechita is mechayev you arba'a v'chamisha. But since there's a requirement of tvicha, of shechita, in order to be chayav, Rabbi Shimon's shita says when the shechita doesn't result in an animal that can be eaten or can get hanoah from, then that's not called shechita, and therefore you fail in the latter two cases to have shechita that would make you chayav in arba'a v'chamisha. And now the Gemara says, Leimu matznitin to loka Rabbi Akiva. Let us say our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. Damar di Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has a drasha. Damar, davar, velo chatzi davar. When it comes to edim, it says, al pnei shnei edim yakum davar. And Rabbi Akiva darshans from that, that davar means you have to testify to the whole matter, not to half of the matter. Titanya, Amar Rabbi Yossi, kishalach abba chalaf teitza Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So Rabbi Yossi was speaking about his father. Abba Chalafta, Chalafta was his father, my father Chalafta, went to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Lomol Torah, V'amrilan, some say it was the other way around, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, so Abba Chalafta, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri went to Abba Chalafta, Amar lo, Harei she'achla shana rishona bifnei shnayim. If he ate in this field in front of 2 edim for 1 year, bishnia bifnei shnayim, the 2nd year he ate in front of another set of edim, ushlishit bifnei shnayim, and the 3rd year he ate in front of a 3rd set of edim, mahu. What is the din over here? This is from the Gemara in Baba Batra that deals with something called the Chazakah. Once a person has been on the land and utilized it like an owner for 3 years, he's deemed to have a Chazakah on the property, and someone who wants to take it away from him has emotzi mechaviro lavareya. The other party has the burden of proof. Now, first of all, it's not just a squatter. You can't just come squat on a land and then have people testify that you've been there for 3 years. That does not help. You have to have a claim as to why the land belongs to you. It's mine. I was yoreshit. I bought it from him. He gave it to me as a gift. You have to have a claim as to why you're there. Once you have given a claim, and then you have evidence of the fact that you've been there for 3 years, you don't have to show any more documentation. Your documentation is no longer relevant because you have the chazakah. The chazakah of 3 years replaces the documentation. Before that point in time, if you don't have documentation, we won't believe you. So over here, he's trying to establish a chazakah that he was there for 3 years. But he doesn't have a single set of edim that can testify to all 3 years. Rather, he has one set of edim that can testify he was there for the first year, a second set of edim that testify about the second year, and a third set of edim that testify about the third year. So he says, what's the din over there? Is that good enough to be a chazakah? So Amarlo, harizo chazakah. Said back to him, that is a chazakah. Amarlo, afani omerkin. He says, I agree with you that it is a chazakah. Elish Rabbi Akiva cholek badavar. But Rabbi Akiva disagrees. So both Abba Chalapta and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri believe that three sets of edim can combine to create a chazakah. But they note that Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that. Shaya Rabbi Akiva omer, davar velo chatzi davar. Rabbi Akiva says that you have to have edim testify to the whole matter and not a portion of the matter. And over here, the matter is 3 years of a chazakah. And each set of edim is only testifying to a portion of the matter. Similarly, in our Mishnah, in the second case of our Mishnah, where he was goneva pishnaim, he stole it with two edim, and then toveach, and then or mocher by another set of two edim. So there are two sets of edim. He doesn't have a set of edim that can testify to the whole continuum here, both of the theft and the mechira and tvicha. He has two edim to the gneva, two edim to the tvicha or mechira. So that's what the Gemara says here, that our Mishnah cannot follow the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Amar Abai, Afila Teima Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah can even be altered by Rabbi Akiva. Mi lo molde Rabbi Akiva b'shnaim omrim kidesh u'shnaim omrim ba'au. Doesn't Rabbi Akiva agree in a situation where you have two edim that say that there was kiddushin over here and two edim that say there was bi'ah over here? Da'af agav the edim bi'ah tzricha the edim kiddushin. Even though the edim bi'ah are only relevant because of the edim kiddushin, but the Eidei Kedushim can stand alone, even without the Eidei Biyah. They have relevance, even without the Eidei Biyah. Davar Karinan Bey. Therefore, it's called a Davar. Now, what the scenario is here, Rashi says that the scenario here is a case where you have two Eidim testifying that she got married. That's the Eidei Kedushim. Then you have two Eidim come and testify that she slept with another man. And that's after the point of Kedushim. So in order for her to be Chayevet for an extramarital affair, we need a combination of testimonies. We have to have the testimony that she's married from the two edim that say that she had kiddushin, and we need the testimony of those that she slept with this other individual. But the edim that slept there say that she slept with the other individual have no knowledge of the fact that she's married. They're just testifying to that discrete event. So the Abaye says that in what you're saying here, Rabbi Akiva should say that that's a chatzi davar. Despite that fact, Rabbi Akiva agrees and says over there that the testimonies can be built one on top of each other. The Eidei Kedushim can establish the fact that she's married, and the Eidei Biyah can establish the fact that she had an extramarital affair, even though they don't know anything about the Kedushin. The reason being is because the Eidei Kedushin could stand alone. The Eidei Kedushin could testify to her being married and having Kedushin, and they don't need the Eidei Biyah at all. Their statement that she's married or she has Kedushin has effect and is relevant and meaningful independent of the Biyah. And since they can establish that fact, it's called a Davar, and therefore, we don't worry or we don't call it a chatzi davar anymore. As long as one of the two sets of edim can stand alone, it's not called a chatzi davar. That's the way Rashi explains it. The alternate explanation that Rashi brings over here is that the first two edim say there was kiddushin, and the second two edim say that there was nisuin through biyah. But again, the second two edim have no idea that there was kiddushin to tell you that the biyah that happened afterwards is nisuin. They could just testify to the discrete event that there was biyah. But the Rashba says that it's not a case of an extramarital affair, but simply a case of whether she's only married or an arusa with kiddushin, or is she now married as a nisua, and that she had bi'ah, and they have chupa, and they're fully married. And obviously that has ramifications both for extramarital affairs, as well as obligations of the parties to each other, and who inherits whom, for all different dinim that we saw in Seder Nashim, There's a difference between a arusa and a nisua. And that's the way that the Rashba reads it. But in the end, is same concept, which is that the Eidei Kiddushim can stand alone, and they don't need the Eidei Biyah to tell that there's Kiddushin. They can establish that there's Kiddushin, even if there was no Nisuin. And so, to over here, we could say the same thing. Hanchanami, Avgav, the Eidei Tvicha, Tzricha, the Eidei Gneva, the Eidei that come and say that he shechted the animal, they definitely need the Eidei Gneva. Even the Eidei Gneva, lo Tzricha, the Eidei Tvicha, but since the Eidei Gneva could stand alone, even without the Eidei Tvicha, Davar Karinan Bey. We call it a Davar, and therefore, even Rabbi Akiva will agree that that is called one testimony or a full testimony, because the Eidei Gneva can be Mechayevim Kefel. They can obligate him irrespective of the Tzvicha over here. The Tzvicha only adds on or enhances the problem, and that's brought by the second Eidim. But that's not called a Chatzi Davar, since the first Eidim have created a Davar that is a standalone Davar. And then the second Eidim are not called Chatzi Davar because the first Eidim don't have the other Chatzi Davar. They are a full Davar. And so then the second Eidim are then granted the status of being a Davar as well because the first Eidim are not the other half of what the second Eidim are testifying about. V'rabonon, haich Davar v'lo Chatzi Davar l'mutei mai. Well, they have the same drosha as Rabbi Akiva. Obviously, they don't hold like Rabbi Akiva to say that it excludes these cases, but what do they think it excludes it? Says the meute a case like this. Echad omer echad begaba, echad omer echad bekrisa. It's to come to exclude a case in which you have one aid that comes to testify here about a girl coming of age. Now, a girl or a guy coming of age, here it happens to be about a girl coming of age, where the way that they come of age is that they reach the age of puberty. The age of puberty is shtei se'arot, if they have two pubic hairs. So, if we have Eidim that can testify about that. So, in the scenario at first the Gemara suggests is, one Eid comes and testifies that they saw one hair on the back, and one says that they saw one hair on the front. Now, obviously, it's not talking about the back and the front, because we're talking about pubic hairs, but it's that one of them saw a single hair, another one saw a single hair, but the two could not be seen together, or each one testified about a different hair. The Gemara says, Hai chatzi davar, v'chatzi edutu. Forget about a chatzi davar over here, that's half a testimony. That's not even a full, forgetting about a half davar, not a full davar, that's not even, doesn't even get off the ground. Because each one is one eid. That's testifying about each seyar. If that's the case, you don't even have an eidut. Eidut is when you have two eidim. Here the two eidim have nothing to do with each other. How can you claim that this is an eidut? That's chatzi eidut, each one of them. Elo lemute, it must be the case here. It's excluding the case of shnai morim. Two say echad begaba, ushnai morim echad bekrisa. You have two eidim testifying that she has a hair on her back, and two testimony that she has a hair on her stomach, meaning that they both cite one hair. Together, technically, now they have seen two hairs. Nevertheless, the Chachamim say that's a chatzi davar, and it does not work to deem her to be of age. Because, hani amrek tanahi, hani amrek tanahi. Because what each one of them is testifying about is that she is a minor. Each two, a deem, are testifying about the fact that they see one seyar and not two seyarot. If that's the case, then she is still a minor. And if that's the case, then each edut independently is saying she's a ktana, and the other edut is saying she's a ktana, or you want to bring them together to make her into a gdola? We can't do that, because each one is testifying to a chatzi davar. And you can't bring them together to make it to a whole davar, because neither set saw the full two se'arot over here, and each one independently only testified to the fact that she is a ktana. And therefore they cannot be mitzdareif to make her into a gdola. Tosfot over here then asks, well then, how is that different than the case of the Chazakah? The Chachamim argued on Rabbi Akiva with regards to the Chazakah and said that when you had two Eidim that said the first year was there, two Eidim said it was there the second year, two Eidim said it was there the third year, why don't you say the same thing? Every set of Eidim is only testifying to the fact that he was there for 1 year. So each one is saying he doesn't have a Chazakah. Oh, to all of them together make it into a Chazakah, how's that different than our case over here? So the Baal Yatosfot bring from the Rif, first of all, they quote from a Baal Fos Perish, the reason is because these Eidim are efficacious in their testimony, independent of the Chazakah, which is that if he never proves that he has a Chazakah here, they are actually now incriminating him and saying that he stole the Peirot for that year. Because they testified that he ate the Peirot during that year, and if he can't prove that he really is the owner of the property who was there for 3 years, then he would have to give the money back to the other claimant who thinks that it's his land and that he stole it from him. So the fact that you have efficaciousness in the testimony independent of the chazakah makes it that the edut is a good edut, and then they can be mitzaref together. I mean that the three different edut can be brought together because independently they have significance. That's the way the Rif deals with it. The Balei Tosafot don't love that, and they give an alternate explanation, which is Hatam Ra'u Kol Ma She'Yacholim Lir'ot V'Oto Sha'ah, which is that when it comes to the case of the Chazaka, the Edim are testifying to the fact that they saw everything they could have seen in that year. I mean, all you could see in that year is the fact that he ate for that year. So when they testify, they're not missing anything from their testimony. They're giving a full testimony to the discrete point that they are making. On the other hand, by the case of the Ktana over here, the two sets of Edim don't see what the other one sees. And that means that they're not testifying to everything that could be seen over here. They're only testifying to a half of what could have been seen here. And therefore, that's considered to be a chatzi davar, because there was more that they could have seen. There's more that they could have testified about. On the other hand, by the case of the chazaka, the edim in that year couldn't have seen any more than that. They saw everything they could see in that year. So that's called a kol davar and not a chatzi davar. And that's the way that the Balei Tosafot, the Rif, favors explaining why, for the chachamim, the case of the ketana and the shesh la'arot is different than the case of the chazaka in the 3 years. Now the Gemara continues, Ganav Umachar B'Shabbat. So moving on to the next section of the Mishnah. And the Gemara says here, V'atanya Patur. We have a braita that says, if he stole and sold it on Shabbat, he is Patur. He doesn't have to pay Arba B'Chamisha. So what is the scenario? We understand the scenario in the Mishnah where he's Chayav. That's very easy to understand. When you sell something or buy something on Shabbat, you're not in violation of anything that would make you Chayav Mita. So if that's the case, even though you're violating whether it's Nisud Derabanan or Nisud Deraita on Shabbat, you're still not in violation when you be Chayav Mita, so there's no Kamle Deraba Mineh. Therefore, you're Chayav Arba B'Chamisha. But we have a Breita here that says you are Patur. That Breita seems to believe that there's a problem in the Mechira that leads to a Kamle Deraba Mineh. And so what is that scenario that we're speaking about? So Amar Rami Bar Chama, Kitanya Ahi De Patur. That Breita that says you're Patur is the following scenario. Bomer lo, akots, teina, mitenati. Go and pick one of the figs from my tree. Bitikni li gnevutech. And then I will take possession of the theft. So the way that the transaction is structured, the way that he triggers the transaction is by picking a fig. Picking a fig from Davar Mechubar on Shabbat is Tolesh, or Tlisha on Shabbat, which is one of the Lamatet Melachot. Oker davar migidulo, and you're going to be chayav mita for doing one of the lametet melachot. So if that's the case, then at the moment that the mechira or the gneva is acquired by the other party, he's also in violation of a melacha on Shabbat. How exactly this happens is somewhat difficult because of a problem that you can't do a kinyan chalipin with peirot. And it seems to be that the vehicle or the methodology that he's using over here is a kinyan chalipin with peirot. And so how does this work over here? Balei Tosafot over here notes something that we mentioned. When we spoke about kinyan chalipin and kiddushin, we mentioned this shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. Here the Tosafot, in passing, mentions the shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, which is found in Boba Metzia. But over here, he says, this is supportive of the Rabbeinu Tam's contention. Meo the perish Rabbeinu Tam necha, the mefresh, to have the peirot of the chalipin. When do we say that peirot don't do chalipin? Haina b'torat kinyan sudar. That they can't act like a handkerchief to do a kinyan chalipin. Shemachzir lo asudar. Where you give back the handkerchief after you've done the kinyan. Like when you sell your chametz and you make the rabbi, the shliach, in order to do it for them, you do a kinyan chalipin in order to empower him. That kinyan chalipin is you take the pen that he gives you and you lift it. And then you give him the pen back afterwards. That's a kinyan sudar. That's a kinyan chalipin. So what Rabbeinu Tam says is that when the Gemara says there's no such thing as a kinyan chalipin by peirot, means that you can't use metalton, you can't use peirot to acquire in the way that you would use a sudar. So you can't take this fig, lift it up, and then hand it back to the rabbi. That won't work. But if you do it in a barter transaction, which is that you give the fig for the other item, that does work as a kinyan chalipin, and it would be a fine kinyan over there. And so that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says, and our Gemara is supportive of that, because now the Gemara says when he cuts the fig, he acquires the Gneva. And since when he cuts the fig, he acquires the Gneva, it looks like a Kenyan Chalipin works here, even through Peirot. And so that would support that Shita the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rina, on the other hand, says that even though we don't think that a Kenyan Chalipin can work by Peirot, not subscribing to the Rabbeinu Tam, but saying that it doesn't work at all, not even if it is a barter transaction, then what you have to explain over here is that the Gneva was in the Chatzer of the acquirer. It was already in his Chatzer. And then he created a Tnai, it seems like a condition, that the Kinyan or his Chatzer will be Kone'et when the individual picks the fig. So he says, when you pick that fig, my chatzer will take possession of it, because the gneva was already sitting in the chatzer of the koneh. And so then when he picks the fig, that triggers the tnai, which gives the effectiveness to the sale, but at that moment he's also chayav for violating Shabbat. And that's how Rishonim who don't agree with the Rabbeinu Tam Shita and say that Kinyan Chalipin doesn't work by Perot at all, they say that the Kinyan happens to a Kinyan chatzer, and that the picking of the teina is simply a tnai or a condition in the matter. Again, there are two ways to explain it. The ganav stole something, and now he's going to sell it. In the process of the sale, he's going to violate the melacha on Shabbat, and therefore he's going to be patur from paying arba v'chamisha because of the fact that he has a kamalei derabba mine. So, the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it here is that he, in order to facilitate the sale, he did a kinyan chalipin by saying that the ganeva is going to be yours, and the exchange for that is him picking a fig from the buyer. So the ganav sells him whatever he stole, vehicle, according to Rabbeinu Tam, for the ganav to sell the ganeva to the other person is he gets paid through this fig. He's getting paid by the buyer with the fig. And so he then picks the fig as his payment. And in picking the fig for his payment, that's what causes the exchange to happen and him to sell the ganeva to the buyer. But the problem is when he picked the fig, it was Shabbat, and he's chayav for Shabbat. That's the way Rabbeinu Tam explains it. The way that the Ri and other Rishonim explain it is that he stole it, and he gave it to the buyer. The buyer's holding it in his chatzer. But there's a condition in the acquisition which says that it will not come into the possession of the buyer until he picks this fig. Whoever set the condition, it sounds like the buyer set the condition. You go pick that fig, and when that happens, my chatzer will take possession of it. So then if he goes and picks the fig, that's both the finality of the transaction for the gneva that he stole now to be sold to this other party, but also makes him chayav in Shabbat because he picked the fig at that moment to create the gneva, the stolen item, to go into the possession of the buyer. So that either case, that's the scenario, but what you have is simultaneous with the sale of the stolen item, he violates Shabbat by picking the fig. All right, so now the Gemara says about that. Amri, b'kevan d'chi tovalei kaman bedina. Lo amrin and le zil shlim. So now the Gemara challenges this explanation of Rami Bar Chama and says, if he went to court now, would we enforce the kinyan over here? Would we force the mocher, meaning the ganav here, to give the gneva item to the buyer? Or would we force the buyer to pay for the item that was stolen? The answer would be no. De mechayev benafshohu. Since he is giving up his life because he's chayav mitah for what he did in violating Shabbat, the court would not enforce any monetary matter over here because of kamlei derabba minei. If that's the case, ha-mechira na-milav mechirahi. That means that the transaction didn't go through. Since it's not a transaction that's enforceable by Beit Din, there was no real transaction that happened over here. If it's not a transaction that can be enforced by Beit Din, that's not called a sale. A sale is something where you have a transaction that can then be enforced after the fact. This is not a transaction that could be enforced because this guy's going to lose his life because he violated Shabbat. And that's not called a mechira. Now, the truth is that even if it fails because of the problem of the mechira, the truth is that if it's sitting in the chatzer of the buyer, he acquires it mishum matana. He gets it as a gift. Because even if the mechira fails, it goes through as a matana, as a gift, because he does acquire it. So even though the kamalei derabba minei ruins the sale, it still will go through as a gift. And we're going to see later on in the Gemara that gifting is the equivalent of mechira when it comes to mechayev arba v'chamisha. So all the Gemara could have said over here, or should have said over here, is it's a matana. And if it's a matana, even though you can't enforce it as a mechira, you could enforce it as a matana. And then he should be chayav for arba v'chamisha because of that. The Gemara didn't answer that because the Gemara is focused on the fact that the Braita says ganav u'machar. It says that he sold it. So since it's focused on machar, it doesn't give that alternative explanation, which it was a matana. Because that could have explained the case here and that could have solved our whole problem. But the Braita and our Mishnah specifically mentioned mechira, and therefore the Gemara wants to come up with a case of mechira. So Amar Papa, this is the case. Throw the stolen object into my chatzer, and then my chatzer will acquire the item. So he says, you stole this item, this hot merchandise, I want to buy it. throw it into my chatzer, and when it goes into my chatzer, I will acquire it. So now, in that process, he is violating Shabbat because he's taking from the Reshut HaRabim, and he's throwing it into the Reshut HaYachid of this individual. So that's carrying from Reshut HaRabim to Reshut HaYachid, which is a violation of Shabbat. But it's also a kinyan of Mechira, because he's having his chatzer be konet. Now, the only way this works is if it happens simultaneously. And now we have a problem, because when does his chatzer acquire on behalf of him? As soon as it goes below the walls. As soon as it drops below the walls of the chatzer, because then it's shamur, it acquires on his behalf. As far as carrying on Shabbat, taking something from Reshut HaRabim, Reshut HaYachid, you need a hanacha. You need it to settle down in his chatzer, or at least get within 3 tefachim of the ground of his chatzer in order to be chayav. That means that he'll be chayav for the mechira before he's chayav mita for Shabbat. And that means he should be chayav arba b'chamisha, because it precedes the chiyuv mita that comes. And therefore the Gemara says, kiman, this could only be k'Rabbi Akiva. This could only be like Rabbi Akiva damar kluto k'misha unchadamya. In his view of movement on Shabbat, he says that when an object is in motion, we don't view it as a continuum, but rather we view it as discrete points along a line. And because of that, we look at it as that every moment there was an akira and a hanacha, and akira and a hanacha all along the way. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, as soon as it crosses over into the Reshut HaYachid, you are chayav mita at that moment. We don't need a hanacha. We don't need it to settle down in order for you to be chayav mita. As soon as it crosses into the Reshut HaYachid, you are chayav mita. At that same moment, when it crosses into the Reshut HaYachid, the buyer is koneh, or his chatzer is koneh on his behalf. Now the Baal Tosfot point out over here, it would have to be that the object is in motion or in the air below the level of the walls. Because if it was above the level of the walls, the Reshut HaYachid goes out the rakia. And for Rabbi Akiva, it would be chayav mita even above the walls. As soon as it crosses the Reshut HaYachid, you won't be chayav for the Gneiva until it falls into the chatzer. And so therefore, the Baal Tosfot say he either threw it through a window, or he kept it below the walls of the chatzer in a manner by which the chatzer acquires on his behalf at the same moment that he becomes chayav in Shabbat for crossing into the Reshut HaYachid. And this is sheet that Rabbi Akiva that says that an object in motion is as if it's going through discrete points along the way. Every moment is an akira na'anacha, akira na'anacha, and akira na'anacha. Therefore, as soon as it crosses the line from Reshut HaRabim and Reshut HaYachid, you become chayav mita for Shabbat. Now, the truth is, the Gemara in Shabbat and Gittin says that this sheet that belongs to Rabbi. Over there, Rabbi has a sheet that only true if it's mikura, if it has a ceiling on top of it, as you say, kluto gemishu chadamya. So here, the Gemara is talking about a case, it's a chatzer where there's no cover on it, and therefore it invokes Rabbi Akiva as the principal behind this position, because he believes kluto gemishu chadamya, even if there's no ceiling, if there's no cover on it. So now, the Gemara says, the irabonon, if the Rabbanan are the author of this position, came into Machi l'chatzer beito kana, then the problem is that as soon as it enters into the chatzer of his house, he's konet. I mean, as soon as it drops below the walls, he's konet. Then, in order to be chayav for Shabbat, he won't be chayav for Shabbat until it hits the ground, until it reaches the ground, because then you have a hanacha. You have an akira and a hanacha. So therefore, according to the Chachamim, this answer would only work if Rabbi Akiva is the author of that breita. Now the Baal Tosfot ask an interesting question over here, which is, even according to the Chachamim, why doesn't it work? The malacha of carrying from Reshut HaRabim to Reshut HaYachid involves a process. It requires akira, which is, means that it has to be taken out of the Reshut HaRabim, and requires anacha in the Reshut HaYachid. But that means that the avera is accomplished over a continuum of time. It starts with the akira and ends with the anacha. During that process of violating the Shabbat, in that Akira Anacha, you gave a kinyan to this guy. You sold this item to this guy because it went into his chatzer. So why does it matter that it happened before the Anacha happened? It still happened after the Akira happened. If that's the case, it happened during the violation of that Malacha. So that's interesting. We discussed this in the beginning of Masechet Shabbat, when you have Malachot that are over time, or a process, like Bishul, planting, carrying. How do you view the violation of those malachot? Are you only in violation of those malachot when you reach the end point, and that creates the violation? Or is the violation a violation over that whole period of time? From the question of the Baal Tosafot, you see that they think that it's a violation over time. You could have answered that simply the violation only happens when it lands. Yes, there's a process that leads up to it, but the violation only happens at that moment when it lands, and before that, all that happened before that is just a prerequisite, but not that it's part of the violation. But the Tosfot clearly view that as a violation all the way along, and therefore they want to know, why is it for the Chachamim that you have not violated the Isur Shabbat at the time of the Mechira, and it should be Kamli the Rabbi Mine. The Tosfot says here, Fi Rabbeinu Tam, Deyev Shel Nisuch Belo Agba, that it's impossible to do Nisuch to Avodah Zarah without lifting it up first. Rabbi Yirmiyah Amar, and Rabbi Yirmiyah Gittin says that, Pashat Agba Akani, he's Koneh the item as soon as he lifts it up, and he's not Chayav for the violation of pouring to Avodah Zarah until he pours it. Leitlei Hagbah Tzorech Nisuch. He thinks that even though the Hagbah is necessary to pour the Nisuch, Rabbi Yirmiyah doesn't connect between the two. Hu Adin, he'll say the same thing over here. The Leitlei Akira Tzorech Hanacha. That Akira is not a necessity for Hanacha. Even though it is a prerequisite, a necessity, the two are not connected. Or, in essence, he's formulating what Guy said before, is that even though it's a prerequisite, it's not a part of the violation itself. The only violation is when it is actually Hanacha. And therefore, since this is according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, and the question is in the Shita of Rabbi Yirmiyah, then it would make sense. V'nir l'ri, davi matzal l'shnui edar kira tzorech hanachu, el edibri ha-makshan shal yosuver tam zeh mishivle. So the Gemara gives an alternate answer. That's the Baal Tosafot says, eino chanami, you could have answered this way. But since the questioner didn't think this way, we answer him in his methodology or in his thought process. His thought process is that just because there's a continuum of violation, that wouldn't be kamlai d'rabbi mine. But the Baal Tosafot say, eino chanami, that would be a violation of kamlai d'rabbi mine. And according to the Chachamim, you could say the same thing here, because it's a process, and the kinyan happened during that process of the violation. But according to the questioner, who didn't think that way, we give an alternate answer, which is, the guy says that my chatzer will not take possession for me until it lands. And therefore, you now have them happening simultaneously, which is, at the landing, you're a violation of Shabbat, and you also acquire it at that time. Rava Amar, Rava says, La'olam kirami barchama. I think Rabbi Chama is right. This alternate explanation is incorrect. And your question on Rami barchama was misplaced. Etnan asra Torah. The Torah says that if you pay a harlot for her services, if you pay a zonah for her services, then the item that you pay or the consideration that you give her cannot be used on the mizbeach, cannot be brought as a korban. Vafilu ba'alimo. That's true. Even a person sleeps with their mother, which is clearly an Isur Arayot, and therefore it's Kamlei D'Rabba Mine, because the Isur Arayot is going to override the Etnan that's here, and doesn't have to make a payment. Vita Velei Kaman Bedina, and if she comes to court in order to collect her Etnan, Mi Amrina Lei Kuv Havla, nobody's going to paskin, nobody's going to say, pay your mother for those services, because it's clear that he's not obligated to pay, because he's going to lose his life in this process. So therefore, if he went to Beit Din to adjudicate this, we would not say, Mirmalei Kumhavle Atnan, we wouldn't tell him to pay for it. El Avagav Dechi Tovale Bedina Lo Amrinan Le Zil Havlo. So even though if he came to court, we would not enforce it, and we would not force him to pay. Kaven Dechi Yavla Havi Atnan. But if he does give it to her voluntarily, it becomes Atnan. You see that it's effective. Even in a case where the person is going to lose their life, and even though it's not enforceable in Beit Din, if they're going to give the item voluntarily, it will take on the shame of the transaction. And over here, it's consideration for the services of the harlot, it'll become etnan, even though it's not enforceable in Beit Din, and even though he's not obligated to pay it. Halchanami, so too in our case. Avagav b'inyan tashlumim. With regards to payment, itavah b'dina kaman lo amrinan le'zil shlim. If he comes to Beit Din, he says, I want to get paid, and he owes me the money, would not enforce it because he's going to lose his life over here. If he says, give me the gneva that he sold to me, we wouldn't enforce it. But since he gives it to him, and they're doing a transaction like this, the transaction goes through, even though it's not enforceable in Beit Din. You can separate between enforceability and the fact that the transaction goes through. The reason for that is because the Baal Yad Tosafot say over here, and similarly Rashi gives a slightly different reason in other places, but says a similar thing, which is that you have a din, let's say, Yidei Shamayim. This is the famous Sota Choshen that says, when it comes to Kamalei D'Rabba Minei, even though you are patur from the fact that you're going to lose your life, you are patur from making compensation. That doesn't mean that you're not still obligated to make that compensation, let's say, Yidei Shamayim. The Chiyuv is there, it's just the obligation to pay is waived because the person's going to lose their life. And so therefore it's waived, but the obligation really underlying that still exists. And since, let's say, Yidei Shamayim, there is a value in that, That means that the transaction can go through. Because there's an obligation, min hashamayim, it's just not an enforceable obligation. Since there is that obligation, it becomes a mechira, or becomes an etnan, when you actually do pay it, or you actually do transact over here, even though it's not enforceable in Beit Din. Because it's a din min hashamayim, not a din in dinei adam. And so for that reason, it goes through. Rashi says in other places that it has a nafkamila tofes. That, let's say, Yidei Shemayim says that if the person who's owed the money is toface it, we won't take it away from him because there is an obligation, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. But that shows you that there still is an underlying transaction that did happen, or there's an underlying obligation that still exists. It's just overridden by the death penalty. But that means that the underlying obligation still exists, but it's not enforceable, and because of that, it becomes etnan when you pay it, and it becomes mechira when you sell the item, and he would be chayav for arba vechamisha, technically, but we can't enforce it, and we can't force him to pay it. But the mechira does go through, and it's a good mechira, and he's patur from arba vechamisha because he's going to lose his life. But technically, he has to pay it, let's say, Yidei Shemayim, the arba vechamisha, and for that reason, the mechira goes through. The sale goes through. The chiyuv bidei Shemayim makes it that if the transaction happened, the transaction is real. So in the case of Etnan Zona, if he pays her consideration for what she did, even though he's not obligated to pay her, the money will be classified as Etnan Zona. And it won't be allowed to be brought on the Mizbeach, even though he has no obligation to pay her. And similarly over here, even though the Mechira is not enforceable in court, because he's going to lose his life because he violated Shabbat, nevertheless, if they did a Mechira, and since the Mechira should go through and he should give him the item, it's considered a good mechira when he gives the item to him, or if the transaction happened, it's classified as a mechira. And if it were not for the fact that he was chayav mita because of Shabbat, it would have been chayav arba v'chamisha. That's what the Braita is coming to tell you. You're potter here because of kamli derabim minei. Now, Tosfot says that how does Rova know that that's the case by etnan? How does he know that that's true by an etnan? If you pay it anyway, it's still called an etnan. So Tosfot speculates that the real reason behind etnan, or the problem of etnan, is zonah. That it's not about the consideration, but rather the problem of znut. And that the din of etnan really belongs to Parshat Arayot. It's a sniff, or it's an extension of Parshat Arayot. And the real problem in etnan is the zonah part, not the etnan part. Once you do that, then anything that you do with that's Arayot is still going to be considered etnan. So even when the individual sleeps with his mother, even though that's znut, but that's the problem. The whole problem of etnan zonah is the znut aspect of it. And since there was znut over here, znut in the sense of arayot, therefore the etnan is a part and parcel of that, or that's what the Torah was speaking about. It wasn't talking about a zonah in terms of the way that we use it in the colloquial today, a zonah as a harlot, but rather a zonah in terms of a legal arayot. And that's the main scenario of etnan zonah. If that's the case, then we're talking about parshat arayot, and included in parshat arayot are all these illicit relations that make her into a zonah, or what are called relationships of zonah, and therefore etnan is relevant in those cases, because that is the core case of etnan zonah in the Torah. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Ayin Aleph Omen Aleph.